Rewind is an award-winning insider's look at Wisconsin politics and public policy. Brought to you by Wisconsin Eye and wispolitics.com. To become a program sponsor, please send an email to rewind@wiseye.org.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not going to be
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind for the week that Republicans on joint finance begin to build their own budget. But first, Wisseye was there. Testimony about a new restriction on abortions. A new subject, a bill would allow voting booth selfies. Revenue Secretary Peter Barker says Wisconsin is 31st in lottery sales, but 6th in lottery winnings. Mr. Barker would like this motto for Wisconsin, winners play here. And the testimony for the speakers, Clean Water Task Force, excuse me, on polluted wells in southwest Wisconsin. Wish I was there.
Up to 85% of children with Down syndrome diagnosed with Down syndrome in the womb never make it out of the womb alive on purpose. But today, we have a chance to change that, to give them the opportunity they, like we, all deserve. The opportunity to live, to flourish, and to fall in love with our world.
It's time to restore free speech in this area and allow citizens to share their participation in the democratic process. This simple bill to clean up an outdated provision in our statutes that is archaic in the age of social media and not in keeping with the First Amendment to the right to free speech.
Everyone's concerned about election security, and we're doing whatever we can to, prevent people, organizations, and groups from trying to have an adverse effect on elections. I see when we get away from a secret ballot, and of course that would be the elector's choice, that we're opening up the gateway for some unintended consequences.
We're actually low in terms of number of lottery tickets. We're 31st in terms of number of lottery tickets that we buy. However, we're 6th in terms of winnings. So Wisconsin's a lucky state. So if you live in Wisconsin, you're a lucky person. In fact, I told our tourism director at a cabinet meeting a couple weeks ago, I said, well, maybe we should say, come to Wisconsin and get lucky. But they didn't like that for other reasons, I guess.
The anti-opiate drugs that are used as part of treatment for opiate addiction are far, far, far more affordable under Badger Care than they are under private insurance. The difference between a public health insurance program that looks out for people's health like Badger Care and private insurance, where all too many of these companies are looking at the profit margin, the bottom line, and not looking at something like whether people can afford anti-opiate addiction drugs.
42% of the private wells tested were undrinkable. In my county, it was 55. We are in the middle of a public health crisis. I don't care how you slice it and dice it, it's a crisis. And to me, the sky is falling. I don't care if the trend is we're getting better or worse. The fact is we're in the middle of a public health crisis.
As we said last week, joint finance did what we predicted, no mm-hmm. big surprises. And Governor Evers on February 28th submitted a budget for $83 billion. Now, joint finance shredded that, removed some of that, more than $2 billion in items. Let's just walk through some of the big ticket. We're not going to get $1 billion in federal aid if you kill the Medicaid expansion, which joint finance did. We're not going to get $516 million by limiting the manufacturing and ag tax credit. We're not going to get $505 million by limiting the non-farm capital gains tax break. We're no longer going to have $87 million go from the general fund to the transportation fund, and we're not going to limit the participation in the choice program. Before we get to some other things, there are no big surprises here?
No, and remember, yes, there's an impact of, I think the Fiscal Bureau memo was about $1.4 billion less in the general fund compared to what Evers had proposed.
Yes.
$1.1 billion less in federal aid. But that's compared to the Evers budget, not compared to current law. We're still going to have $2.1 billion additional revenue compared to the current budget to spend in this one. So there's money there. It's just not as much as there was before, and Republicans seem not to be concerned about that because they don't want to spend as much as Evers wants to. They're not going to put $1.4 billion into schools like Evers wants to. If they're going to do an increase,
yeah, sure.
Then not that much. It's still the big piece of this are to be played out, but what really happened here was that the main pillars of the Evers budget were pulled out,
yeah,
and we're moved past the Evers budget to now the GOP legislature's budget.
Right, and other things that they yanked out of the governor's budget, an increase in the minimum wage, mm-hmm, letting our local governments, cities, towns, villages, increase their property tax levy by 2%, and both marijuana issues, both medical and decriminalization. Anything else you want to add that was on the chopping block?
Well, you know, that was in the one big motion they started with on
130
Thursday.
Items?
131.
Thank you.
But they paired the wiping out of the relaxing of the revenue or property tax levy caps for municipalities with killing Evers' proposal to increase their state aid by 2%, mm-hmm, about $15 million a year. So you add it together and it basically keeps things flat, which goes back to what they've been dealing with is if you are a local government, you get to increase your spending by basically new construction.
That's all.
And that's it. And the complaint from Democrats was, look, you're telling communities that aren't growing, that are having problems, that they can't raise revenue. They can't raise revenue. They can't improve quality of life. They can't improve quality of life. More people move out. More people move out, their revenue goes down. And so it's like this vicious cycle of hurting these communities. It's not just places like Milwaukee or urban areas. It's across rural Wisconsin as well.
Before we hear from some Joint Finance Committee members, let's consider the governor's response. All we hear from Republicans is no. Today, Republicans took a fiscally irresponsible and a morally reprehensible vote to blow a $1.4 billion hole in the people's budget. That's the governor's term. Every Republican must be held accountable for their decisions on health care, not just here at the Capitol, but back in their communities. JR, in his statement, he specifically referred to Republicans like Amy Loudenbeck must go back to Rock County and explain her vote. Republicans like Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald must return to Horicon and Juneau, explain that what the Republicans did. And finally, Senator Howard Markline must return to Reedsburg and Richland Center to let his constituents know he voted against funding to expand access to dental care for kids, seniors, and people with disabilities. My question, JR, is the governor has said, I'm going to build support for this from the ground up. Realistically, can that happen?
No, because Republicans have shifted their messaging on this issue. I think they've realized that it was easier for voters to understand the simple save state money, cover more people, right? Very simple. They've shifted to a messaging now of it's expand the welfare rolls. This is a welfare program, using their words, that beyond doing that, there are cheaper options out there. Why would you get away from these cheap options? They're cherry-picking. The federal exchange under Affordable Care Act, they provide options for people to buy insurance on the marketplace. They're cherry-picking the cheapest ones they can find to say, look how cheap this is compared to putting people on a government program. So they're changing their messaging to try and have a simpler, cleaner look. It's welfare, and there are cheaper options out there because they realize that, look at the polls, Marquette, is it 70%?
70%.
Who support expanding Medicare. So we're trying to find a way to, or Medicaid, find a way to push back the message a little bit. And no, I mean, there are definitely Republicans I've talked to in both caucuses who are interested in expansion, but not enough to get it through both houses. And even if you could build support, like in the Senate, for example, among Republicans, you need 17 votes. There are at least four or five conservative members of that caucus who would never vote for an expansion of Medicaid. So how do you get that done? I just get the impression that, yes, there's some people open to it, but the path is not there in the caucuses to get it done. And remember, we don't have like where it's a free vote on each individual issue of the budget. It is one budget, one vote. Mm-hmm. And so you got to figure out a way to put something together that can get through those caucuses with the votes you need from those caucuses. That's going to be difficult if you try to put Medicaid expansion in there.
Right. So it's time to hear from members of the Joint Finance Committee on the emotional issue of expanding our Medicaid program. Please.
So I spent some time looking at some of my Republican colleagues' campaign websites and to find their position on health care. Representative Born, sitting next to Representative Loudenbeck, I almost fell out of my chair. If you go to markborn.com or whatever it is, you know, like big American flag in the background, he's got an issue tab that says encouraging affordable health care. The last sentence, this is the part where I didn't fall out of the chair because he has a website, but the last sentence of his health care issue, his promise, his campaign website says, everyone deserves access to high quality health care. Everyone deserves access to high quality health care. Well, Representative This vote right now on this motion is your opportunity to fulfill the promise you made to your constituents this fall.
I thought it was interesting that you kept talking about all of our statements of affordable health care, access to health care seemed to be the theme. And then but then the only way to accomplish that is to accept this motion. Somehow the only way that we can have affordable health care or access to health care, more access to health care, if you're on the other side of the aisle, is to have it be a welfare program, to have it be government run, to have the taxpayers pay for all of it. We believe that about half of the people that you are trying with this motion to force onto government-run healthcare are already partnering with the private sector.
No other state has chosen to do what Wisconsin has chosen to do because it didn't make logical sense. We traded one sector of poor for another. And I think it's really important that we realize that these individuals that we are talking about, up to 138% of the poverty level, if they are making $7.50 an hour, they're still taxpayers. So this is their money too. And we need to make sure that we put those dollars where those dollars will be best spent. And that's making sure that everyone has a level of coverage that they can afford.
I take you back to 2009 Act 28, when the Badger Care Plus Core Plan was originated. They said, we will see an estimated increase of average monthly enrollment as a result of expanding Badger Care of 24,900 individuals in 2009-10, 39,500 in 2010-11. It blew right through it. They had to put a cap in it. When they finally capped that program, it was at 65,300 people. It wasn't sustainable. They had to stop it. They made a promise to the people of the state of Wisconsin, and they couldn't keep it. That's what we're saying, is that if we're responsible here, we can do this in a way that not only, to Representative Zimmerman's words, protects the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin, but also does the right thing for those people who do need our help for health care.
Just a footnote more on Joint Finance Committee. Senator Alberta Darling visited Washington with a few other GOP
last
leaders.
Week, yep.
Yeah, on May 1, and she fell. And we don't know how long she's going to be out. And Senator Luther Olson, vice chair from the Senate side of Joint Finance, and the statement from Senator Darling, due to recommendations from my doctor, I will not be able to attend the first executive session. I expect to rejoin the committee soon and continue to fight for taxpayers. Any word on whether you think she might be back for next week's committee?
Not sure. Swish her speedy recovery at this point.
Yes. Alberta, hope to see you soon. Okay, new subject. The Assembly Health Committee and a lot of attention in the Senate on abortion-related new restrictions. And Majority Leader Steinke says next week the Assembly is going to vote on three bills that would, let's quickly summarize them, make it a felony to intentionally cause the death of a child born alive as a result of an abortion, ban abortions on the basis of a fetus's race, gender, or other factors, require physicians to tell women considering taking an abortion-inducing drug the process could be reversed. We sat on the table for a long, emotional debate next week in the Assembly.
Actually, interesting note about these bills, the Born Alive bill, kind of the first one. In committee, in both houses, there was a suggestion brought up, because right now the person who can be penalized would be the doctor.
Yeah.
We allow the penalties for the mother as well and others in the room.
Yes.
Andre Jacques, state senator from DePere, Republican, he voted against that bill in committee, saying he thought they needed to add that amendment to expand those who'd be held responsible.
To include?
Mothers.
The woman, yes.
That, from my understanding, from people who backed the bill, is not going to happen. Wisconsin Right to Life put out a statement this morning.
Press release this morning.
Andre Jacques for his comments about this bill, disavowing
what they expect to be his amendment, which would extend some liability to the woman. Excuse me.
Yep. So that's going to be interesting to watch. But, you know, this is, we talked about it last week, part of a national movement on abortion from Republicans to put Democrats in difficult positions. You know, you got the Ralph Northam comments, the Virginia governor back in January about late eight-term abortions that kind of sparked some of this. We all know that Weaver's going to veto all of them. It's just interesting. It'll be interesting to watch, though. Do Democrats, any Democrats, break ranks and vote against the or for the bills? And then what happens if they go to a veto override? What's that going to look like?
Well, and this, you and I will be at the Republican State Convention a week from tomorrow. Don't you expect some of these pro-life statements and references to these bills to play a pretty heavy role there?
Part of this is even if these bills fail as expected because of an Evers veto, there's still something to excite the base ahead of 2020 because look at Wisconsin 2020. We're going to be a key state in the presidential race. There's no statewide race other than President Trump versus whomever at this point. We'll see who it is, and sometime next year, they will need an excited base to kind of help turn out for him.
Do you see the emphasis on these abortion bills in any way linked to the Medicaid expansion debate? Because the Republicans, they're up against the 70% in favor of Medicaid expansion. So are they trying to shift the focus to health care to this? We're pro-life?
I haven't asked anybody about that. They see these are bills that are unpopular, that even people who support abortion rights in general can get behind. Yeah. And they think they put Democrats in bad positions. Plus, you know, on principle, they support them as well. So,
okay. Let's hear a snippet from the Assembly Health Committee debate. Speaker Robin Voss and Democrat Lisa Subek of Madison, please.
We already require abortion facilities to provide information to the state about the marital status, the education levels, the age, and the race of the woman who receives the abortion. This bill would more closely, as Senator Kapinga said, just follow what Minnesota already does. It would add a few other types of information to have so that the state, as policymakers, have the ability to understand the number of previous abortions, how the abortions were paid for, and what specific type of abortion and the reason for it, so that we have that information.
When we script something like this as politicians, mm-hmm. are we not trying to insert ourselves in that relationship between the patient and the provider? And should we be doing that, or should we be allowing medical providers who are trained, who know what they're doing, to provide the care that is needed, and to provide the information that is accurate, that is proven, and that is ethically responsible.
If you go to the Wisconsin Department of Corrections website, you'll see that we have overcrowded prisons. You'll also, it's been in the news, no secret, that we have a lot of staffing issues at some of these prisons. Mm-hmm. So last week, the Secretary of Corrections, Mr. Kevin Carr, announced that the Evers administration will give $5 per hour raises to guards and sergeants at Columbia, Dodge, Green Bay, Techita, Waupun, and Lincoln Hills Youth Prison. This would raise the starting wage for guards from $16.25 to $21.25. So this is the whole issue of criminal justice. Joint Finance yesterday approved some additional beds at, I think, two of these facilities. Mm-hmm. Representative Travis Tranel, Southwest Wisconsin, represents what is no longer called Supermax, the Boscobel Maximum Prison, said, Boscobel guards are dealing with the exact same prison population as these other maximum security institutions, murderers, rapists, gang members, and drug dealers. Why aren't they getting the same $5 per hour raise? What's your take on this, JR?
The complaint seems to be from Republicans that this wasn't a well thought out plan to address this prison guard shortage, that all they're going to do is trying to make these jobs more attractive for people to transfer into these facilities. The Democratic response is, look, these guys are in charge for 8 years, and they didn't do anything that made progress on this issue. We have to find something to get people in these jobs because the art has been around for years. When the unemployment is low, it is harder to find people to fill jobs as prison guards because it is difficult work, it is a difficult environment, and you get paid better for a less hostile environment doing something else. So there's an issue there, and they got to figure it out. We'll see how this plays out in Joint Finance. But at this point, what I can kind of tell you is, you know, it's one of those main things where Republicans are saying this isn't a good idea, and Democrats say, well, you had your shot. Work with us.
Well, Democratic Representative Evan Goyke took this shot. Well, at least we have a governor now in Democrat Tony Evers who has visited a prison, whereas former Governor Scott Walker didn't. Let's look at the response from Corrections Secretary Carr. The safety of our staff and the people we serve must be a priority, and severe staffing shortages threaten that safety. To those of you who feel undervalued, please know that I see you, DOC leaders, Corrections Department leaders see you, and the governor sees you. But as you say, we've got a long way to go in the DOC budget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I am kind of a wonk on this next subject, JR. The Tourism Department puts out an annual estimate of what tourism is worth to Wisconsin's economy. The new estimate is $21.6 billion. It's up almost 5%. That's direct spending. Indirect spending, $8 billion. Tourists paid $1.2 billion in federal taxes, $879 million in state taxes, $703 million in local taxes. Tourism boosted by the Brewers are in the playoffs, Madison CrossFit, Harley-Davidson 115th celebration. Any PSs before I wrap it up?
No,
this is all me. Okay.
All you. Go for
okay,
it.
I'm going to wonk it. The gross domestic product in Wisconsin, Federal Reserve of St. Louis estimates it at about $320 million. So this is a stat you need to go home, tell your wife and kids. Then tourism is about between 6 and 7% of our gross domestic product. Are you impressed?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, awesome. Okay, let's turn to your stock picks.
Right, so Megan Wolf, so we all remember about a year and a couple months ago, Republican State Senate turned out the administrators for the Elections and Ethics Commission unhappy about their connections to the old John Doe investigation, go way on back to the old Governor Accountability Board. She was selected last year by the board as the interim, urged the Senate, the board did, to confirm her.
Yeah.
Finally, now we're seeing movement. Her nomination was referred to committee, came out of committee this week.
She's unanimously, I think, didn't
all it? Queued up for Excuse a vote me. In the state Senate. So we would finally have, for the first time in the history of the since creation of the Elections Commission, an administrator who's been confirmed. And I asked people, like, what took so long? You know, one thing, when she was picked last year, the Senate was essentially done already, right? She was picked in March. They're for all purposes, were done. They came back in the extraordinary session, but this wasn't a high priority for them.
They didn't add her to the list of 82.
Yes. So now she would be confirmed both for a term to finish out this, that ends in 2019, but another one that would end in 2023, I believe. Still waiting to see what happens with Dan Carlton, the Ethics Commission Administrator who replaced Brian Bell.
Yes.
So waiting to find out what happens with that. But if this is a sign that things are moving in the right direction, we're going to have permanent people in place. And, you know, I asked, like, some folks about Meg. I said, look, nobody has any objections to her. You know, she did a good job with the election last year. Everything's good to go.
But let's also point out that none of Governor Evers' cabinet secretaries have been confirmed, right?
They have not been queued up for a vote on the floor. I'm looking for that Senate calendar to come out sometime today.
And, we'll both be checking that calendar. Okay. You have a great mix. Congratulations.
All right. So the Barnacle. I'll tell you what it is first. So at first, the Barnacle is a parking device that if you are a parking offender, they can put this yellow board across your windshield. You can't see, okay? And here's why it's fixed. Usually, when a bill goes to the governor, it's either signed or vetoed. There's a third option, rarely used, to allow it to come along without your signature. The first time in 25 years, a bill became a law without the governor signing it. That's because this bill that came out of from Republicans that would basically allow communities to add this barnacle as an option for repeat offenders was not signed by Governor Evers.
So it becomes law.
So it comes law.
First time in 25 years?
1994 is the last time it happened. I was kind of curious why, and because I didn't hear any objections to it raised from the governor's office. And during the process, now remember too, this bill passed by voice votes in both houses. It was an 8-0 vote in committee in the assembly. It was 3-2 in the Senate, however. What I heard, though, is that there were concerns from Democrats during the committee about, one, there's only one company that makes a barnacle right now, so you're kind of benefiting one company. Two, you're adding people who are already struggling to pay their bills. You're adding another thing that they can, you know, hit you with this barnacle. Three, there are concerns that, yes, it goes across your windshield, but you could hang out your window and drive.
How is it fixed? I mean, how can I not move it?
It's got suction cups on there, and if you try to pull it off, it has this horrible-sounding alarm. There's GPS attached to it. And the advantage of it is, from backers say, is that if you are a parking attendant and you affix the boot to a wheel, you have to bend down. You're not seen in traffic. That's a dangerous situation. Okay, so there's your barnacle. Here's the backstory. I asked, why not veto the bill? Why, if you got a problem with it, why not? What I heard back was that you might see this often this session because there are bills like this where Republicans have pushed them, Democrats are kind of split about them, but there are deep concerns by stakeholders that Tony Evers cares about. And so rather than like offend those folks, he's going to say, okay, it's not worth the political capital to veto the bill, pick a fight with Republicans on it. You know, I mean, I don't want to diminish the people who care about this bill, but this is not the biggest fight in the Capitol. Why spend capital on it? Two, there has not been a veto override of a full bill. Now, partial, different story. A fully vetoed bill since 1981. You don't want to risk being the first governor to have a veto overridden since then. So you might see this once in a while where Evers says, you know what, these folks have a concern, I'm just going to let the bill become law.
Okay. You woke up today not knowing what percentage tourism is of our gross domestic product. I woke up today not knowing about Barnacle. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Falling.
The National Guard, there's a great series this week in the Capital Times. Following up, we've kind of more detail about the Guard struggles with
sexual harassment and assault.
There is a first lieutenant profile in there who alleges there were three fellow guardsmen who assaulted her over a three-year period, that the guard found her not credible and then took the step to try to revoke her benefits as punishment. It's not a good look for the guard. Just a really difficult series to read. I really encourage you to look at it and see. This is not a shining moment for the National Guard in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Okay, let's look ahead. 9:45 next Wednesday, the entire lawsuit challenging the lame duck, which implicitly also challenged the extraordinary sessions going back to 1981, oral arguments before the state Supreme Court, and to all of you who have called or will be calling, Wisconsin and I will be carrying them live. Anything you want to say to preview that?
No, it's going to be fascinating to watch.
It is.
This is a case in first impression, which means we haven't dealt with this before. So we're going to set a precedent here.
Okay. And then Joint Finance will be back Tuesday and Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
They are not going to deal. You and I have seen the Tuesday agenda. No super heavy lifting there.
Not school funding yet. Not transportation. The ones we're really dying to know about, no.
Right. And Wisconsin and I will also be carrying both that Supreme Court argument, 9:45 on Wednesday. Tuesday and Thursday, Joint Finance meetings. Any other business, sir?
Oh, there's a state convention next week for Republicans.
We'll talk about that a week from today. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for May 10.